The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by the, I think I can still say, newly appointed Commissioner for Democracy, Justice and the Rule of Law, that of course being Michael McGrath. And it is one of those, it is an interesting time to get the area of brief for which he is responsible, because it covers a multitude, but prime amongst it is working to copper fasten European democracy, to prevent foreign information and manipulation of elections and of European discourse, and to guarantee the safety of political candidates and elected representatives. Michael McGrath, it's an interesting time to get the brief that you have.
Hi, Anton. Good to talk to you. It certainly is. It's a very wide portfolio that I have, with justice and democracy, rule of law, consumer protection, data protection, media freedom. So it's a very broad and varied brief. But yes, within it is the whole democracy piece, which we really shouldn't take for granted. The fact that in the European Union, we live within a democratic area where there are free and fair elections. But of course, there are threats both internally and externally, online and offline. And we need to ensure that our democracy is safeguarded, but at the same time, ensure that any steps or any measures that we take do not encroach on our fundamental rights, on freedom of expression. And so it is a balance, but we should be clear-eyed, I think, and realistic about the fact that there are real challenges to democracy within the European Union and beyond. So I'll have an important role to play. President von der Leyen has asked me to bring forward what is called a democracy shield. So we're in the process of developing that concept now. It will deal with issues like foreign information manipulation and interference.
Well, maybe let's pick up on that one specifically, because obviously there has been a lot of focus on that. We saw covert interference. I mean, the parliamentary report provided to the British government after the Brexit vote, there have been a number of different analyses about covert interference in elections and in discourse across Europe by Russians and by others. We now see overt interference. Elon Musk weighing in with the AFD, Elon Musk trying to, and X being used to undermine the position of the UK government. What can you do in the face of both of those?
Well, the main tool that we have within the European Union is the Digital Services Act, which is a digital rule book as such, covering a variety of issues, including consumer protection has a role, but it's relevant for goods, for services, but also for the conduct of elections. And there are obligations on the regulated online platforms. And while we have to protect freedom of expression and elections, you know, have to be free and fair, and people are free to vote for whoever they wish, at the same time, we have to recognise that the online platforms have incredible power through the algorithms, the recommender systems, the capacity they have to amplify certain content. And so the DSA gives the European Union the capacity to engage with the online providers, to get information from them, to go in deep into their systems if required.
But Commissioner, to what extent is that actually having any impact? I mean, if you look at what we saw on X in respect of the AFD and what we saw on X in respect of the spreading of misinformation about what Keir Starmer might have done when he was with the prosecution service in the UK. That was active mis and disinformation, and it's hard to point to any example of something being done in response to it.
Well, of course, the EU has to follow due process and itself has to make sure it's compliant with the rule of law, and where it does engage with an online platform, they have to be given every opportunity to respond, to provide information to the Commission. So there are extensive powers, but that comes with a responsibility to exercise those powers judiciously. But yes, it does mean that there isn't a silver bullet. There's not a button that you can press in the European Commission head office to stop what you think might be wrong. First of all, you have to get the evidence. You have to prove that what is happening is an interference using the technology in an election system, an election process, and then you are empowered with steps and resources to intervene. But that has to go through a quite a lengthy process. That is the virtue of being in a democracy, is that those that you are challenging have a right to contest any actions that may be taken, and the European Commission has to act carefully, and it has to make sure that any action it's taking will stand up in a court of law, because inevitably these actions that are taken by the Commission against very large platforms do end up before the European Court of Justice, and they will rigorously examine the legal basis of what we've done. They'll examine whether or not due process and proper procedure and the rule of law has been applied. So the Commission has to abide by the standard that it's seeking to.
Well, propose. How then, Commissioner, do you square that? Because it does sound like possibly necessary, but bolting of stable doors long after the horse will have bolted. One of the things that you're being asked to do is prevent disinformation and pre-bunk both misinformation and disinformation. How do you do that through a system so achingly bureaucratic?
Well, that's the question that we will now be seeking to answer through this Democracy Shield. And part of it, I think, is about empowering citizens and encouraging greater citizen engagement and participation within our democracy. But it will look at issues around fact-checking, for example, giving people the tools that they need to differentiate what is accurate, what is misinformation, what is blatant disinformation. And that will be an important part of the Democracy Shield, as well as working with the member states about the conduct of elections, which is a national competence. So the holding of elections and the manner in which they're organised is a matter for the member states. But there's a lot that we can do by working together, by sharing information, by sharing best practice.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Commissioner.
From each other.
Do you think we will, in the next year or two, see the social media giants feel themselves being reined in by the European Commission in a way that materially changes how they behave?
But there are various actions that are in train, and I have to allow those actions to take their course. So in the democracy sphere, for example, you'll be aware that the Romanian Constitutional Court suspended the presidential election recently. There was action taken by the European Commission against TikTok. But again, that has to go through due process, and that will take time. And, you know, I can't see anything that would prejudice the outcome of that action by the European Commission. So it does take time, and that is a reality that we have to acknowledge and face up to in a democratic rule of law based system.
But do you think it will take time and affect significant change?
I think it will affect significant change, because when you look at the ultimate powers that are there within the DSA, they certainly will have an effect when deployed against individual large online platforms. But that's why we have to be really careful in using those powers. But there are very large penalties, up to 6% of turnover of large global online platforms. So it would be really significant and reputationally damaging if it comes to that. We hope it doesn't, and we will provide the opportunity for the platforms to respond where individual issues arise.
Okay, now how do you square the circle that is, you're going to have a significant schism, there is already one but it is widening, between the European approach to regulation when it comes to online information and social media versus America? And we've already had the Vice President J.D. Vance at a speech in Europe put a shot across the bows that effectively says, get out of our way, and there isn't a prayer that we are going to wear the kind of heavy hands-on regulation that Europe is in favour of. How can you avoid us being in a situation where you've two entirely separate regulatory regimes with all the problems that that entails?
Well, of course, the regulation that we introduce applies within the European Union, but it applies evenly to companies irrespective of their origin. So it applies to European companies, Asian companies and American companies and so on. And that's the way it needs to be. So it's not targeting companies from any particular jurisdiction. But there are issues that require guardrails to be set, and that is why we have the Digital Services Act. It is quite new, but it does provide effective response mechanisms where you have illegal content online, for example.
But do you think it's going to end up being a new front in the culture wars? Is this going to be something that will be the subject of an excuse for another tariff? Is this going to be another public battle? Because it's hard to see how the Americans will wear having their social media giants regulated to the degree that you want in respect of a 500 million person market.
Well, they are regulated, but so too are the large tech companies from elsewhere in the globe. So it has to be a level playing field that if you are operating within the European Union, then we have an entitlement to set the rule book and we must apply it then in an even-handed and consistent manner. And that is what we are seeking to do. And any action we take is subject to full challenge and appeal and will have to go through the courts and so on. But I think it's important to underline what the DSA is not, the Digital Services Act, is not content moderation. It's not saying you must take this down or that down, except for illegal content, which I think people can generally agree with. But it does set parameters and it does set a framework that when it comes to civic discourse, when it comes to the conduct of elections, that the platforms have to demonstrate the steps that they are taking to protect the integrity of our electoral systems. And given the risks that are there, I think that's a very reasonable approach by the European Union. And we will
even when you see them currently being directly involved in trying to sway those elections, overtly, publicly.
Well, that's where we have to use the tools that we have. And the European Union, through DG Connect, my colleague, the Executive Vice President, Tenever Cunnan, has direct lead responsibility for digital regulation, has taken action in a number of cases. And look, we have heard the response from Vice President Vance and others who've been highly critical of the system of regulation within the European Union. But those are the rules of operating within the European Union. They're applied in a very fair and a very consistent manner. We believe they are important. They are balanced because they do protect our fundamental rights. And one of my responsibilities as Commissioner is protect the Charter of Fundamental Rights, including freedom of expression. And I am satisfied that the DSA does not encroach on freedom of expression. It does not deny somebody from having a very strong opinion and articulating that opinion. But it does set guardrails within which we expect the platforms to manage that online space.
Okay.
And given the power of these platforms, we think that's a very fair, balanced and appropriate way to approach it.
You mentioned the freedom of expression and the need to balance that. You spoke earlier on as well about threats from within. One of the threats that many perceive to freedom of expression within the European Union is that which has been undertaken by one of the member states, that being Hungary, wherein you have their Sovereignty Protection Office stepping in respect of journalism that they may not approve of, in respect of NGOs that they may not approve of. And this is now subject to a lawsuit from the European Court of Justice, or through the European Court of Justice. How much play do you intend to give Hungary? How much rope do you let them have to behave in an authoritarian fashion before it becomes an existential issue about their membership?
Well, a lot of action has been taken by the European Commission, and you know we have to treat all member states equally. We have an annual rule of law report that looks at every single member state, including Ireland. It makes recommendations. It looks at the rule of law across four different headings: the independence of the judiciary in the country, is there a free and pluralist media sector, it looks at the anti-corruption framework and other checks and balances within the institutions of the member state concerned.
Yeah, but it doesn't take much analysis to spot Hungary for what Hungary currently is. If it waddles like a duck and quacks like a duck.
Yeah, and that is why Hungary has been the subject of numerous infringement proceedings that have been going through the Court of Justice, and all of those that have been concluded have been won by the European Commission. It is also the reason why a very large amount of EU funding is currently denied of Hungary, because they are in breach of the rule of law. So we have various instruments at our disposal. At the moment, you're talking about almost 19 billion euro that is denied of Hungary because of rule of law breaches. So that is a very powerful response. My first port of call is dialogue and engagement. I'm available to engage with the Hungarian authorities, and there is ongoing engagement. I'll be visiting there in the next couple of weeks, meeting with the government, yes, but also with civil society organisations and the Integrity Office in Hungary to hear of their experience, the day-to-day reality in the country. So we've used various tools that we have, which, you know, unfortunately can not just hurt the government, but end up denying funding to a country and its citizens, which is not what we want to do. The rule of law is not an optional extra. It's not a la carte. It is the law of the European Union. It's a founding value of the European
Union. But if, as you say, you have taken the kind of actions that you have taken and enforced the kind of financial penalties that you have enforced, and we don't see much in the way of swerving from their ideological and policy positions, what do you do next?
Well, there is a facility within Article 7. It's currently before the Council of the European Union. It was initiated by the European Parliament in 2018, and it's been with the Council since, and it's a matter for the Council to move that process on, and that can ultimately result in depriving a country of voting rights. So it's a nuclear option. It's not one that anybody wants to take, but it is a tool that is open to the Council of the European Union to take the next step on. But for me, it's about using the instruments that I have, which are very powerful. And in the context of the next EU budget, which we are in the process of framing at the moment, I and the Budget Commissioner have been asked by President von der Leyen to build an even closer link between rule of law compliance and access to EU funding, because it's not fair on everybody else that EU funding could be made available to a country that is in flagrant breach of rule of law that applies to everybody else.
Commissioner, you use the phrase metaphorically. It's unfortunately becoming more of a literal one, that of the nuclear option. Can I ask you your reaction to the current security position of Europe and the current turn towards militarisation? I saw in an interview that you did with the Irish Times yesterday, you said that the prospect of Russian tanks in an EU state is no longer unthinkable. We have President Macron doing what was until recently unthinkable, reminding the world of France's nuclear deterrent and its availability for the entire continent. Where does this lead?
Look, the world has changed in recent weeks and months, and not for the better. Russia's invasion of Ukraine was completely unjustified. That's not a view that is shared universally around the world, unfortunately. But their aggression has caused untold damage and loss of human life. So we do need peace, but we need a just and a lasting peace in Ukraine that is underpinned by security guarantees, so that any peace and any ceasefire is not just used for the rearming of the Russian Federation and allowing them to go again in a period of time.
And do we need vast military investment across Europe? Do we need more nuclear deterrence owned by EU member states?
We certainly need a dramatic scaling up of investment. I would wish it were otherwise. I would wish that we lived in a world where this was not necessary. I would wish that we could prioritise and focus our expenditure on the services that people want in healthcare and education and housing and social protection. That's my political instinct. But we're in a situation today where the European Union is facing a threat. And the point I was making in that article in the Irish Times was, if Russia prevails and if Russia essentially wins the war in Ukraine, who is to say that they will not go further? When you listen to the saber-rattling of their spokespeople, you look at what Putin himself has said down through the years, he does not recognise the legitimacy of a number of the former Soviet countries that are now members of the European Union. Places like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they have real worries. When you talk to their commissioners, but their ministers and people in those countries, and I was in Finland just 2 weeks ago, where the dominant issue of discussion is security and defence. They have a 1,300 kilometre land border with Russia, and they are consumed by that issue of security and defence.
And many in Finland would regard themselves already at war with Russia.
Yeah, like we have a different perspective in Ireland because we are some distance away and it's a function of geography. But in the role that I have and in the engagement that I've had across Europe, I can see that the view is very different as you move east towards that Russian border. And that is why, regrettably, we cannot say that Russian tanks rolling into an EU member state is unthinkable, because it's not, were they to prevail in Ukraine. So there is an awful lot at stake, and it will take Europe time to really scale up its investment in security and defence, and indeed the capacity of the defence industry. We do need to work with our US partners, and we do need them to be involved in the future security of the region as well, certainly for as long as Europe is in that process of getting to a point where it can completely and independently stand on its own two feet. And at this point, it can't.
Michael McGrath, thank you very much. That is Michael McGrath, Commissioner for Democracy, Justice and the Rule of Law.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.